Okay. Good to see everybody again, and we are ready for the Bhagavad Gita study. We are up to, I think this is 84th, the 84th episode. That's a lot of time. That's 84 hours so far. And we're just starting the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. We're on the second verse of the 12th chapter. Okay, let's chant Jai Radha Madhava. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunabi Hari Gopi Jana Malaba Kiri Varadhuti Gopi Janavallabha Kiribarat Hauti Yashodanandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamunatira Banachari Yamunatira Manachari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunyabihari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunyabihari Gopi Jana Malaba Giribharadhati Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhaudi Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamunatira Manachari Manachari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunyabihari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunyabihari Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parabhadakacharya Osa Tada Siddhashi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Chananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Ren Sei Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Garadha Srila Sri Gaur Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopika, Banath, Shyam Kun Radhakunda, Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturam Kijai, Jagannatha Swami Kijai, Yamunamai Kijai, Shivani Galasi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Go, Primananda, Hari Hari Go. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Srila Prabhupada. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachari Nivashesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deja Dardi So Omagana Timirandasha Vinanjana Shalakaya Chaksuram Miridam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha I offer my most respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who has opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Okay, good to see everybody. And now we will go on to the Bhagavad Gita class. Let's see. Before we start, I just want to answer one question a devotee asked me this morning. There's this interesting story in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, about a king named Riga. So basically, this king gave the same cow in charity to two different Brahmins. And it wasn't his mistake. It was an honest mistake. Well, it wasn't a mistake. It was just basically, he didn't know what he was doing. What happened is he gave the first cow, that cow, to one Brahmana. The cow wandered back to his herd. And then he gave the cow to another Brahmana. And the two Brahmanas were arguing with each other whose cow it is. And they got very upset with him and walked away, didn't even accept many thousands of cows in return. And as a result, King Riga had to suffer. Of course, he was given a choice by Yamaraj whether he could suffer the bad stuff first before enjoying the good reaction, that is, after he died. So he chose the bad reaction first, and as a result, he became a lizard. But that lizard was in a well that was seen by Krishna's sons, and Krishna's sons couldn't get the lizard out of the well. So eventually Krishna came, extended his hand, got the lizard out of the well, and to make a long story short, the lizard changed back into a heavenly personality. Okay. So the question is that if one just does something without knowing there's such a heavy reaction, I mean, how could we ever go back to Godhead, because we are making so many mistakes knowingly and unknowingly? So the answer to that question is that King Riga was not making a mistake in devotional service. He was making a mistake in what we call the karma kanja activities of the Vedas. In other words, in devotional service, or Krishna says, Kunteya pratijanihi nami bhakti pranashyati, the mighty body will never perish. He also says, in spite of the most abominable action, accidental thing, the devotee is considered saintly because he is rightly situated. So we don't really have to worry about making mistakes that we had no control over. But during the karma kanja practices, one really has to worry about that. So anyway, so then what happened is King Riga was saved. Eventually, he goes back to the heavenly planets. And after he enjoys the heavenly planets, he goes back to home, back to Godhead. And then Krishna instructs the residents of Dwarka in such an interesting way. He says that anybody who takes, I don't remember all the verses exactly, but anybody who takes the property of a Brahmana, he has to suffer. And at one point he says he has to suffer 60,000 births as a worm in stool if he takes the property or tries to enjoy the property of a Brahmana. Very, very dangerous procedure. Anyway, don't take the property of a Brahmana. Be very careful. So, anyway, so the point is, in the karma kanja practices, or even in the impersonal path of realization, if one makes a mistake, that's it. One, there's a great reaction, a very heavy reaction. Or one has to perform so much what we call prayaschitta, atonement for what he's done. But in devotional service, if there's some mistake, then one simply goes on chanting. That's it. Simply goes on chanting, and that's the best rectification. In fact, that's mentioned in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Tasmat sankirtanam vishno jagan mangalam anghasam mahatam api kauravya vijakantika nishkritam. This is the answer given by Shukadev Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. When Maharaj Parikshit is trying to figure out how the living entities who are suffering in hell can be liberated, and the only answer that Shukadev Goswami gives is that by chanting the Lord's holy names, Tasmat Sankirtanam Vishnu, by chanting the names of Vishnu, of Krishna, Jangan mangalam angasam. All the sinful reactions of this entire universe become eradicated. And is the most auspicious performance in all the universes. Mahatama Pikarovya. That even the great souls, the Mahatmas, confirm this. Vijayakantika Nishkritam. It is the best type of atonement. So therefore, better we do devotional service than some mundane activity. What else did I hear from Prabhupada? Something very interesting. Anyway. Oh, yeah. But yeah, it was actually very interesting. I listened to a class, and actually a memory of Prabhupada that some devotee had. And Prabhupada was talking to this one devotee, and I won't mention the devotee's name. The devotee came in, and he was, I guess, not so strict and had his own following outside of the Krishna consciousness movement. And he said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you know, I'm just, basically, I'm a little fallen. And then Prabhupada said, a reply to him in such a sweet way, Prabhupada said, something like, but I always love you. So you can see Prabhupada's compassion and love for us was not conditioned upon any sort of reciprocation. Of course, the more one would surrender to Prabhupada in the sense of following Prabhupada and trying to please Prabhupada, the more one would make spiritual advancement, not only would, will, at the in the present tense, will make one spiritual advancement, but Prabhupada's love is unconditional. Most of the love we find in this world, except in some cases between the mother and the child, is conditional. In other words, based upon what the other person does or what the other person doesn't do. And we can easily reject another person. But Prabhupada's love for everyone was basically unconditional. It's amazing. You know, Prabhupada, there was a story of Prabhupada showed his love for a little kitten one time, and another time for a little bug. A little bug was eating a flower that was close to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said to the devotees, put him outside, he's hungry, etc., like that. So, the pure devotee's compassion and love and care is unlimited and not dependent upon the circumstances, upon the person, upon any sort of reciprocation. Trying to remember that, you know, Prabhupada always loves everybody. It's pretty cool. But one should reciprocate with Prabhupada, and then one gets Krishna's mercy. It's not that you think, oh, Prabhupada loves me, I can do any damn thing. It's like, almost like what many Christians think, that Jesus loves me. He does. But that doesn't mean you can do any damn thing and he'll die for your sins so you can go on sinning. Yes, he does love you. Then you should think, if someone loves me so much like that, then I owe that person a debt of gratitude. I should simply do what that person wants because that person really loves me. And that's the first thing I experienced when I met Prabhupada in 1971. Prabhupada walked into the room and he exuded this mood of compassion and love, and I felt Prabhupada looked at me and, you know, I was thinking, well, I was looking at this hippie guy, you know, anyway. Prabhupada looked at me and I felt, you know, here's someone who feels so much compassion and love for me, and I have to serve him. And at that point I became determined to serve Prabhupada with my very life and soul, and I'm happy I did. That's wonderful. Okay, so now we'll go on to Bhagavad Gita. Sorry about that brief interlude. We're going to share the screen and go to the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is entitled Devotional Service. Very nice. It's actually one of my favorite chapters. Of course, they're all my favorite chapters. Maybe not 11. I mean, I like 11, but it's not one of my favorite chapters. Why don't I like chapter 11 as much as the other chapters? Because it describes the universal form. I'm not into the universal form. Other people may be into it. I'm into Krishna in Raj. That's what I'm into. All right. Okay, so let's go on to the Bhagavad Gita. All right, this is text 2 in the 12th chapter. This is a beautiful chapter, and I can't say enough about this chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Mayavesha Mano Yemam. Actually, let me explain. This verse is in relationship to Arjuna's question. The question is, which do you consider more perfect or more important, those who meditate on your personal form or those who are absorbed in your impersonal form, which is better? That's the first verse in this chapter. So Krishna here begins to answer. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Mayavesha Mano Yemam Nitya Yukta Pasate Shraya Pariyopetas Ta Te Me Yuktatamo Mataha Yuktatama Mataha. So Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of God, had said, Mayi, upon me, Avesha, fixing, Manaha, the mind, yea, those who, Mam, me, Nitya, always, Yuktaha, engaged, Upasate, worship, Shatya, with faith, Pariya, transcendental, Upetaha, endowed, te, they, may, by me, Yukta, Tamaha, most perfect in yoga, Mataha, are considered. Translation, the Supreme Personality of God had said, those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged and worship me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be the most perfect. Krishna very clearly answers the question that Arjuna had. So let me just translate this word, shraddha, which means with faith. Actually, that comes from the word shrak, which means the heart, shraddha. Like you have the word shraddha, means to give one's heart. So faith, and I think we've described this before, but faith doesn't mean simply the process of belief. Faith means to trust that in doing what the person who you have faith in says, everything will be accomplished. And of course, that's a verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Shraddha, shabde vishah sakahe sudrita nischaya. Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami gives the definition of faith as having complete trust that by doing what the person says, then everything will be accomplished. All your material and spiritual needs will be taken care of. So that is faith. So one who worships Krishna or fixes their mind, those who fix their minds on Krishna in his personal form and have great faith are considered by Krishna to be the most perfect. That means no one is more perfect. Purport. In answer to Arjuna's question, Krishna clearly says that he who concentrates upon his personal form, that's Krishna's personal form, and worships him with faith and devotion, is to be considered most perfect in yoga. For one in such Krishna consciousness, there are no material activities because everything is done for Krishna. In other words, the activities are a manifestation of your faith. This is really an important understanding. If your activities belie your faith, that means they contradict what you're saying, that means you don't have faith. That's all. Because if you really believe something, I mean, for example, let me give a practical example and it doesn't apply to me. Let's say if I really believe the price of gold is going to increase. You know, if I really had 100% faith in that, I would buy gold. Anyway, I do not invest in gold. I do not invest in the stock market. I don't have money to invest in gold or invest in the stock market. I am just a sannyasi with nothing. Everything I have belongs to Prabhupada and Krishna. But I'm saying if I was a businessman, I had full faith like that, then I would buy. So in other words, full faith necessarily puts one in a position to do something. If you don't do something about it, that means you're lacking in faith. Simple as that. Of course, it's not an all or nothing thing. One may have a glimmer of faith, a little bit more faith, 90% faith. But here, Krishna's talking about complete faith. A pure devotee is constantly engaged. Sometimes he chants, sometimes he hears or reads books about Krishna, or sometimes he cooks prasadam, or goes to the marketplace to purchase something for Krishna, or sometimes he washes the temple or the dishes. Whatever he does not let a single moment pass without devoting his activities to Krishna. Such action is in full samadhi. So you may think materially, well, to hear and chant, read books about Krishna, that's great. Cooking prasadam, that's good. Going to the marketplace, I don't know about that. Washing the dishes, is that spiritual? I'm a Brahmin. Washing the temple, I'm a Brahmin. Actually, Brahmin. Prabhupada said Brahmin means suci, clean, revolutionary clean. In fact, Prabhupada, when he was talking about cleaning pots in the kitchen, even if there was a burnt spot on the bottom of the pot, if the bottom of the pot was not shiny, he considered it unclean. And a Brahmin is someone who likes cleanliness. So anyway, so anything done for Krishna is of the same absolute quality. And remember this verse? Brahmarpanam brahma havya brahmadno brahmano tam brahmatena gantavyam brahma karma samadhanam. By working, let's say, 100% for Krishna, and sometimes this verse is translated by full contribution to Brahman, but it means full engagement in service to Krishna. Then Brahma karma means the spiritual activities. Then the person doing the activities becomes spiritualized, the activity becomes spiritualized or is spiritualized, the result of the activity is spiritualized, and everything becomes completely auspicious. So that's a pure devotee. So you can't really gauge who is a pure devotee by, let's say, the type of activity he's doing. You can gauge by who he's doing the activity for. I mean, for example, give me an example, because I'm not saying that I'm a devotee, a good devotee. So today, I went into the kitchen. I wasn't cooking for Krishna. I wasn't cleaning for Krishna. What I was doing is fixing the refrigerator again for the umpteenth time. Because we have this commercial refrigerator, it was leaking. So I went in my karmi clothes. It's interesting. Clothes are not karmi. What determines whether clothes are karmi, vikarmi, akarmi, or moksha karmi, or whatever karmi you want to throw at it, is how you're using them for Krishna. Try to get that straight. What determines whether something is Vedic is whether you're using something for Krishna, or using the building for Krishna, whatever you're calling Vedic. So anyway, getting back to the point, so I went in, and I was took my little screwdriver and was in there today and unplugging a pipe that was part of the drainage system of the refrigerator, because the refrigerator was leaking water on the water, on the floor. And so one may think, is that spiritual? And my answer is, it is spiritual. Why? Because it's Krishna's refrigerator. You understand? It's used for preparing bhoga. So that activity of fixing the refrigerator is just as spiritual as someone offering arti. Just as spiritual as someone reading the Bhagavatam. Of course, we do have to read the Bhagavatam. We have to go to arti. I understand. It's not that I'm just like becoming a mechanic 24 hours a day. But it's just as spiritual. You know, I do many things around the temple here. I had to fix the lift we have. A lift means something for handicapped people to enable them to reach the temple floor. So we just do the needful. A devotee does the needful. We've had devotees join our temple who were, quote, too good to do certain activities. They thought, I was born in a very rich family. Not me, of course. And they were thinking, you think that I'm a paratotus. That's Spanish for someone who could do anything, or someone who will do anything. And I said, yes, we are Paritosh. We are someone who can do anything for Krishna if Krishna wants. Even in the beginning days here in New Goloka, we didn't have any money. And so sometimes there was one instance where the toilet wouldn't work and I had to just take it outside and see why it didn't work. And someone had put their toothbrush in it. And one might think, you, Sudra activity, bungi. But actually, it's service to Krishna. Like Prabhupada was carrying paper to the printer. Prabhupada was doing so many things in order to please Krishna. So one has to be ready to do whatever Krishna wants if one wants to be Krishna conscious. One can't say to Krishna, I'm a Brahmin, I can't do this. And just one interesting story I wanted to tell. Once upon a time, there was someone who just didn't want to get his hands dirty. So I engaged in some construction. And that construction involved concrete. And we were pouring the second floor of the temple, the existing temple. And I was bringing the concrete up to the second floor using a machine. It's called a front end loader. Anyway, you don't have to know what that is. And I put concrete in the bucket and brought it up so it can be shoveled and everything like that properly in the second level. So I thought, you know, I just do a little trick. This guy doesn't want to get dirty. So I gave him like a partial abhishek with concrete. Anyway, you have to have a sense of humor. So we shouldn't mind getting our hands dirty. So whatever you do, if you do it for Krishna, it doesn't matter if it's done properly under the direction, whether you're a businessman and giving the results to Krishna, whether you're a preacher and giving the preaching to Krishna, it doesn't matter. Because Krishna is pleased with a bhakti. Krishna says in the Gita, bhakti mam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. And Krishna also says, yat karoshi yat asnachi, yat jahoshi dadashi, offer me leaf, a fruit, a little water, with love and devotion. That's the whole point. You know, offer 100% of what you have to Krishna. All your talents. Krishna's given you talents. Krishna's given you intelligence. So use it all in Krishna's service. Don't worry. Be worried about what people are going to think of you. It's not important. Be worried about what your guru will think of you. Be worried about what Krishna will think of you. But everybody else, you know, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. I think you know that rhyme. Okay, so now Krishna's going to talk about the impersonal realization. This next verse. Ye tukshara manir desham avyaktam paribhasate sarvatshagam atinjam cha kutastam achalam durvam saniyam yandhriya gramam sarvatra samabhudayaha te prapnuvanti mameva sarva buddhahite rataha. Yea, those who, too, but. Aksharam, that which is beyond the perception of the senses, anirateshyam, indefinite, avyaktam, unmanifested, paripasate, completely engaged in worshipping, sarvatragam, all-pervading, achinchyam, inconceivable, cha, also, kutastam, unchanging, achalam, immovable, dhruvam, fixed, saniyamya, controlling, indriya, gramam, all the senses, sarvatra, everywhere, samabhudiyaha. Equally disposed, te, they, prapnuvanti, achieve, mam, me, eva, certainly, sarvabhuta, hite, for the welfare of all living entities, arataha, engaged. But those who fully worship the unmanifested, I don't even know how to worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed and immovable, the impersonal conception of the absolute truth, by controlling the various senses and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons engaged in the welfare of all at last achieve me. In other words, it's a long process. As Krishna states in the Gita, remember the verse? Bahunam janmanamante gyanavamam prapachite vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabhai. After many, many births and deaths, one who's actually in knowledge comes to understand me, Vasudeva, sarvamiti, I am everything, you know, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Samatma Sudrulabha, that is extremely rare. And also another verse, Banushanam Sahasreshu Kastit Yatati Siddhye, Yatatama Pisidanam Kastit Mam Piti, Tatwaha, Tatwataha. Out of many, many, many persons, hardly anyone is looking for the truth, and all those who are looking for the truth, hardly anyone knows me at all. So, even amongst those who have achieved the truth. So, yes, it can be taken as a stepping stone. At least you understand you're not the body. There is the energy of the Supreme Personality of God. It's better than nothing. It's better to be a jnani than a karmi. Oh, how about that one? Karmi is one who simply wants gross sense enjoyment. A jnani is one who realizes, hey, this material world is temporary. That's a no-brainer. I remember talking to my mother when I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, because I thought that if you preached to your mother, she would become a devotee right away. So anyway, so I talked to my mother and I said, this material world is temporary. You know, one day we have to leave our bodies. So we should do something about it. And she says, don't ever talk like that with me. Don't ever talk like that. She almost washed my mouth out with soap when I said that. And then I went to my brother and said the same thing. And what did he say? Of course, he couldn't chastise me because he was Jotabai. For those who don't know what that means, it means younger brother. Smaller brother. Not Motabai, Jotabai. Anyway, so he was Jotabai. I went to Jotabai. And I said the same thing to him. And he said, don't spoil it. You're spoiling it for me. You know, it's just like if you go to the movies and you're sitting next to someone who has seen the movie before and he knows the ending. And he says, hey, you know, don't worry. This is the ending. And you think, oh my God, now the whole movie is spoiled. So somehow or other, we spoiled the movie of this material illusion for many people. And my brother didn't want me to spoil his movie. He said to me, in great earnestness, ignorance is bliss. Well, that may be his opinion. But to me, ignorance is not bliss. Anyway, so these are about the impersonalists. Those who do not directly worship the Supreme Personality, the Supreme Godhead Krishna, but who attempt to achieve the same goal by an indirect process, also ultimately achieve the same goal, Sri Krishna. After many births, the man of wisdom seeks refuge in me, knowing that Vasudeva is all. And actually, that's the verse I quoted. When a person comes to full knowledge after many births, he surrenders unto Lord Krishna. If one approaches the Godhead by the method mentioned in this verse, he has to control the senses, render service to everyone, engage in the welfare of all beings. It is inferred that one has to approach Lord Krishna. Otherwise, there is no perfect realization. Often there is much penance involved before one fully surrenders to him. So also the process mentioned in this verse is very much connected to what I was describing with King Riga before. Because if you make a mistake in the impersonal process, boom, back to zero. Yes, back to zero. Oh my God. It's like playing a video game. Sorry, I don't play video games. But sometimes if your character gets killed, that's it. You know, you got to start the game again. So with Krishna consciousness, Krishna, of course, tells us that Svapam Apyasya Dharma Shatrayate Mahatoba. In this endeavor, there's no loss of diminution. And a little endeavor can save one from the most dangerous type of fear. So if you become 1% Krishna conscious, you do not lose that. So it's much better. So in order to perceive the super soul within the individual soul, one has to cease the sensual activities of seeing, hearing, tasting, working, etc. Then one comes to understand that the Supreme Soul is present everywhere. Realizing this, one envies no living entity. He sees no difference between man and animal because he sees the soul only, not the outer covering. But for the common man, this method of impersonal realization is very difficult. Do not try it. It is impossible. And then, This next verse about impersonal realization. Klesho dikataras tesham avyakta fakta cheta sam avyakta hi gatir dukam dehava vir advapyate. Klesho trouble adikataraha very much tesham of them avyakta to the unmanifested asakta attached. Cheta sam of those whose minds of yukta toward the unmanifested, he certainly, get the he progress, do come with trouble. Deha vadbihi, by the embodied, advapyate is achieved. Translation, for those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested impersonal future of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. In other words, one of the most important aspects of spiritual progress is vairagya, detachment. Okay? So, why become detached? You have to have some why, some motivation for becoming detached. Now, generally those who are impersonalists, and we talked about this last night, what is their motivation? They are frustrated. Just like that song goes, can't get no satisfaction, but I tried. So they are frustrated, so they're frustrated by personalities, by relationships. I don't want any more relationships. Yeah, you find that sometimes if someone has a really bad marriage, and then he says, that's it. I don't want anything more to do with marriage, or the wife, or the lady may say, I don't want anything more to do with those men. Yuck. That's called smarshana vairagya. Which means renunciation in the crematorium. So in other words, at the crematorium or at a funeral, naturally people feel very renounced and spiritual, but then they quickly forget about that renunciation. Especially if they happen to be in Ireland, then they get drunk at the funerals. Or if they happen to be in Fiji, they take this thing called kava and get completely intoxicated at the funerals. So, anyway, so in other words, people take the impersonal process generally because of frustration. And that frustration is not a good motivation long term. Short term, sure, it's great. I don't want anything more to do with this material world. It's miserable. Okay, that's short term. Can really help you if you come to Krishna consciousness. But then long term, you forget. You know, how many people, you know, they get divorced, remarried, divorced, and remarried. You know, just like, who was that? The Englishman, Henry VIII. He was a king in England. Not only get divorced and remarried, but when he couldn't get divorced, he killed his wives, some of his wives, because the church would give him a divorce. And then he kept trying again and again and again. This is called chewing the chewed. When you actually try the same thing, which is insanity, according to the great Acharya Albert Einstein, and you keep doing the same thing and you think you're going to get a different result. So the impersonalists, they start very enthusiastically. But after a while, material desires arise. Or even if they go to Brahman, the verse is, what is it? Arui kachena param padam. That even they go high, then they come down again because they miss the activities of this world. So that's why it's so difficult. Whereas in bhakti yoga, we have different sources of inspiration. Like, you know, I was describing in class this morning, that we do what we're doing to please Prabhupada. We do what we're doing to help people. We really want to help people. We want people to be happy. We want to save people. Save the souls. We want to save people. We do what we're doing because we want to make Krishna happy. We like to see Krishna smile, the deity smile. All these different reasons, or we like to please the devotees. So it's very personal. We have all these different types of motivation. I remember when I went to the university, I studied motivation. I had a whole course on motivation. And basically, they didn't teach me anything. But a personalist has real motivation, whereas an impersonalist doesn't really have any motivation. I mean, it's not any personal responsibility. You know, if he slips, all right, so what? Isn't it? It's just like, forget it. So that's why it's so difficult, because you have no motivation. If you have motivation, you can do anything, as the says faith can move mountains, isn't it? That's Christian saying. Faith can move mountains. And look at Prabhupada. What was his motivation? His motivation was to please his spiritual master, to save the world, etc. And he did amazing things and underwent amazing austerities for that purpose because of that spiritual motivation. But an impersonalist, you know, why is he motivated? And ultimately, he may be motivated because he wants to make money or whatever, or fame, prestige, you know, whatever motivation he has. The group of transcendentalists who follow the path of the inconceivable, unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord are called Jnani Yogis, which we talked about before. They want liberation. And persons who have full Krishna consciousness, engaged in devotional service to the Lord, are called Bhakti Yogis. The word yoga means to connect. Okay, they're connected through love. Right. And the Jnani Yogis are connected through their little brain, speculative process. So love is actually stronger. It's much stronger. That's what we see. You know, love, can, if you love someone, you're willing to do anything. I mean, there's an example I was thinking of just now. That once upon a time, there was a little child who was trapped under a car. His mother saw that. What did she do? She lifted the end of the car. I mean, who can do that? I could not lift the end of the car. And allowed her little child to come out. That's love. That is real love. Okay. Now here, the difference between Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga is definitely expressed. The process of Jnana Yoga, though ultimately brings one to the same goal, is very troublesome. Ultimately bringing one to the same goal is very troublesome, whereas the path of Bhakti Yoga, the process of being in direct service of the Supreme Personality of God, is easier and as natural for the embodied soul. The individual soul is embodied since time immemorial. It is very difficult for him to simply theoretically understand. He's not the body. In other words, you cannot do a don't. You're not the body. You're not the body. You're not the body. You're not the body. You're not that pain. You're not that toothache. Therefore, the bhakti yogi accepts the deity of Krishna as worshipable because there is some bodily conception fixed in the mind which can be thus applied. And actually, the deity is Krishna. This is a transformation. And the example Prabhupada gave was that when the deity is installed, it's like the post office installing a post office box, and you can put your letter in a post office box rather than just going to the post office, you know, the big building in Hillsboro, wherever, and it still gets to the same destination. Of course, nowadays, with our wonderful government interfering with our right to send mail, they're trying to eliminate post office boxes because they're afraid we may vote in the election and use post office boxes to vote in the election. That's another issue. Anyway, of course, worship of the Supreme Personality God in his form within temples, not idol worship. There is evidence in the Vedic literature that worship may be sagun or nirgun of the Supreme possessing or not possessing attributes. So, saguna, guna in this particular case means attributes. In other cases, it means ropes, you know, that tie you in the material world. So, saguna means with attributes, or nirguna means without attributes. So in other words, you can approach God from either angle of vision because God has both attributes to himself. Let's not use the word attribute. Aspects to himself. There's an impersonal aspect and a personal aspect, and of the two, the personal aspect is supreme. Worship of the deity in the temple is sagun worship, for the Lord is represented by material qualities, but the form of the Lord, though represented by material qualities, such as stone, wood, oil, paint, is not actually material. That is the absolute nature of the Lord. In other words, as Prabhupada said, Krishna can take his material energy and transfer it into spiritual energy. Krishna can take his spiritual energy and transfer it into material energy. Prabhupada said Krishna is like an electrician who can take electricity, make it heat or cool. And you find that. You have these air conditioners that are reverse cycle. They can heat your house or cool your house. I have one of them here at my house, which is not on right now, because you wouldn't be able to hear the class clearly. A crude example may be given here. We may find some mailboxes on the street, and if we post our letters in those boxes, it's exactly what I just talked about. They will naturally go to their destination without difficulty. But any old box or an imitation which we may find somewhere, but which is not authorized by the post office, will not do the work. Similarly, God has an authorized representation in the deity form, which is called Archa Vigraha, the form of worship. This Archa Vigraha is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. God will accept service through that form. The Lord is omnipotent, all-powerful. Therefore, by his incarnation as Archa Vigraha, he can accept the services of the devotee just to make it convenient for the man and conditioned life. So for a pure devotee, he can actually see Krishna directly. I mean, there's no need of the deity worship because he shakes Krishna's hand, Krishna talks to Krishna. And so, but he loves the deities also. But for a devotee, there's no difficulty in approaching the Supreme immediately and directly. But for those who are following the impersonal way of spiritual realization, the path is difficult. They have to understand the unmanifested representation of the Supreme through such Vedic literatures as the Upanishads. And they have to learn the language, understand the non-perceptual feelings. That means feelings that don't come from the perception of the senses. That's all. And realize all these processes. Basically, what we're talking about is Sankhya. And remember, we talked about Sankhya. Sankhya means to count. It means to analyze, basically, these different elements. The senses, the sense objects, the earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, the unmanifested. Gets really difficult from this point onwards. And ultimately, understand they are not any of those things. I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this. And ultimately, what am I? Spirit, soul. And then ultimately, this is supreme soul. It takes time. Like if you go through a whole process of understanding what you're not, it's going to take a lot longer to discover what you are than directly going to what you are. That's pretty easy to understand. This is not very easy for common men. A person in Krishna consciousness engaged in devotional service simply by the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, simply by offering regulative obeisances. Bow down, Mr. Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, unto the deity. Simply by hearing the glories of the Lord and simply by eating the remnants of foodstuffs offered the Lord, realizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very easily. There is no doubt that the impersonalists are unnecessarily taking the troublesome path with the risk of not realizing the absolute truth of the ultimate end. Yes, that's very possible. We'll go for years and years, lifetimes and lifetimes, and really not get to Krishna. But the personalist, without any risk, trouble, or difficulty, approaches the Supreme Personality directly. Actually, the Bhagavatam, it says that even if one deviates from the path, there's no loss. You know, and what is the gain for someone who lives a long life who doesn't even go on the path? A similar passage appears in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is stated there that if one ultimately has to surrender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this surrendering process is called bhakti, but instead takes the trouble to understand what is Brahman, what is not Brahman, and spends his whole life in that way, the result is simply troublesome. Therefore, it is advised here that one should not take up this troublesome path of self-realization because there is uncertainty in the ultimate result. Yes, you may become Krishna conscious at the end if, there's a big if, you get the mercy of a devotee. Because without the mercy of the devotee, the path's not going to lead you there. But if you're sincere, you get the mercy of a devotee. Just like that story I told from the Jiva Dharma about this impersonalist who was meditating in Benares, Kashi. And he was meditating, and a devotee came by and chanted the holy names, and he was on Harinam, and he got the mercy, and wow, he ended up in Mayapur, ended up taking shelter of a great Vaishnava, and became a great Vaishnava himself named Vaishnava Das. Nice name, Vaishnava Das. A living entity is eternally an individual soul, and if he wants to merge into the spiritual whole, he may accomplish the realization of the eternal and knowledgeable aspects of his original nature, but the blissful portion is not realized. So what that means is our nature is Satchitananda, eternity, bliss, and knowledge, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. I got to get in that order. And you can realize, without being a personalist, you can realize somewhat of the eternality, somewhat of the knowledge, but you cannot realize the bliss, the ananda. By the grace of some devotee, such a transcendentalist, highly learned in the process of jnana yoga, may come to the point of bhakti yoga or devotional service. That's exactly what I said, by the grace of a devotee. Because only a devotee gives bhakti, not Krishna. At that time, long practice in impersonalism also becomes a source of trouble because he cannot give up the idea. You know, people are so attached to it that even when they come to a devotee, they just think, well, isn't ultimately we're supposed to just like merge and become one? Kind of stupid. Therefore, an embodied soul is always in difficulty with the unmanifest, both at the time of practice and at the time of realization, even when it comes to Krishna consciousness. Every living soul is partially independent, and one should know for certain that this unmanifested realization is against the nature of his spiritual, blissful self. Yeah, when I see that lady meditating in the temple room, or just sleeping, or whatever she's doing, I just feel so sad. So sad. There's like sadness emanating from her. I just want her to get up and just start dancing, but she won't. One should not, I mentioned that this lady goes for 6 hours a day in our temple. One should not take up this process. For every individual living entity, the process of Krishna consciousness, which entails full engagement in devotional service, is the best way. If one wants to ignore this devotional service, there is danger of turning to atheism. Personalism and atheism are the same thing. Thus, even in Prabhupada's Pranam Mantra, we hear Nivashesha Shunyavadi. Basically, Prabhupada came to actually argue or convince people out of this impersonal philosophy and void philosophy. Thus, the process of centering attention on the unmanifest, the inconceivable, which is beyond the approach of the senses, as already expressed in this verse, should never be encouraged at any time, especially in this age, because we have a very short life. It is not advised by Lord Krishna. Okay, we will end there and take some preguntas. For those of you who don't know what a pregunta is, that means question. Okay, let me let you ask your preguntas. Hold on a second. You are officially now allowed to unmute yourself, so please ask a question. Who has a question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Aditya Narayan Das.
Hey, Aditya Narayan.
Hare Krishna. They just now humble obeisance. Hare Krishna. Maharaj, you were talking about, it's so inspiring how you explained that a Vaishnava's mood is just do anything, whatever is needed for Krishna's service.
Yeah.
And you gave the example of fixing the fridge. And Maharaj, my question is for a journey of a sadhaka, like how much should be there a focus on, because like everyone has a particular inclination to serve Krishna in a way based on his, you know, based on the modes of nature associated with or based on psychophysical nature. And on the other hand, that is the mood of like whatever is needed to be done. So how much should a person actually think to balance these two things? Like, does that make sense?
I understand the question. Yeah. Like everybody should have a sadhana. Sadhana means chanting, following the principles, waking up early, reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, have the important aspects of devotional service, you know, worshiping Tulsi, worshiping the deities, chanting the holy names, living in a holy place, associating with devotees, like that. That's for everybody. Read an extra devotion. Those essential items of devotional service for everyone. Then, apart from that, we should be ready to do whatever Krishna wants. However, we should follow our psychophysical nature in our general service. Like, it's not that I'm fixing refrigerators all day long. That's not my psychophysical nature. But I'm ready to do it. You know, if it takes just an hour, you know, I'll do it. But if it's going to take 3 weeks, I'm not going to. I mean, if Krishna wanted, I'd do it. But I think it would be really hard on my mind because it's not my psychophysical nature. You know, it's kind of frustrating. So, so as far as following one's psychophysical nature, that is important. So one can be stable and steady in Krishna consciousness. At the same time, everybody's meant to do the sadhana business. Does that answer the question?
Yes, ma'am. So
everybody should be engaged in preaching also, somehow or other, going out and distributing books or preaching. bringing other people to Krishna consciousness.
So basically, Maharaj, so let's say if there's a festival and there's like so many things to be needed to be done, and you could just do those things like an emergency situation, but that does not become your regular service, you know, and that your regular service will be more inclined to what your psychophysical nature tends towards.
Yeah, like in the Bhagavad Gita, there's this description, you know, prescribed duties, desired duties, and emergency duties. So, you know, we have our prescribed duties, which are according to our psychophysical nature, so that we can be steady and sane in this world. But there are emergency duties. I mean, emergency doesn't mean someone's dying. It just means a temporary duty that occurs due to some need. Like if there's a festival, you know, Radha Yatra festival or some festival, then one may have to take a hammer and nail and help build a cart, even though he may picture himself as being a Brahmin. So that's the point. Yeah, and that distinction is made in the Bhagavad Gita between prescribed, desired, and emergency duties.
And thank you so much.
Later on in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada talks about that, and Krishna talks about it. Okay, thank you. Nice question.
Thank you.
So, well, anyone else have a question?
Hey, Krishna, this is Rishikesh.
Narayan distributes so many books. I mean, he's responsible for bringing so many people to Krishna consciousness. And he does our university preaching, which today North Carolina State got shut down.
Oh, I didn't read that yet.
Yeah, that just happened. All the undergraduates study at North Carolina State is now going to be online because they had a lot of cases there.
We had the program last night at the university.
Yeah, I heard about that. It was very nice, and now they shut us down, shut the whole school. But that's all right. It won't stop the preaching. We got the internet here. We got the internet, and if Gopal cooperates, I want to go out and get the Krishna bus tomorrow. If he doesn't, I'll go and get the Krishna bus myself. Anyway, we have a whole plan. So, okay, other questions? Other personality?
Rishikesh.
Okay.
My question, I'm driving good, so I don't see me properly. So Gurudev, my question is about Karna, you know. Karna by all means, qualification wise, he was a Kshatriya. Then why he was considered Sudpudra? I mean, why he was considered as a son of a Shudra, you know, although by qualification, by actual Varnashrama, by quality and karma, one becomes,
That was actually...
That identifies
that was,
the Varna. But even in Krishna's time... Yeah.
Why was he considered a Shudra? I'm going to give two answers.
Even in Krishna's time, it was...
He was considered a Shudra because he was envious of the Pandavas. That's why. I mean, that's really the ultimate. I mean, you look into Karna's past, he was a demon in his past life. And he didn't have the qualities of a Kshatriya. He had some of the qualities. Just because someone is good at martial arts doesn't really make him a Kshatriya. Another point is that, you know, his father, apparent father, was a chariot driver, and his mother, Radheya. Anyway, so, but that's just external. That's just external. So the first time that Karna actually pops into the scene in the Mahabharata in terms of relating with Arjuna and the Pandavas is him challenging Arjuna. At the they were having some sort of competition after they graduated from Dronacharya school. So he was challenging Arjuna. And also another point is he showed himself not to be a Kshatriya because he actually lied to Parashuram. You know that story? You do know that story. That he approached Parashuram to be Parashuram's disciple. And he told Parashuram that he was a Brahmin because Parashuram really didn't like Kshatriyas too much for another reason. He liked to He liked to kill Kshatriyas. I mean, so many times, like 21 times. So anyway, so he lied. Whereas a bona fide Kshatriya is not going to lie. So there's many instances in which Karna, another point is a real Kshatriya is not going to support the bad guys just to get even with the good guys. You know, he was always angry at Arjuna. And he was given the opportunity by Krishna when Krishna informed him that he was actually Konteya instead of Radeya. And he didn't take that opportunity. I mean, he showed in many ways that he was unqualified to be considered a Kshatriya. So, I mean, that's a little lesson.
In that case, Guda, even Bhishmadev also started the wrong side, you know.
Yes, that's right. Bhishmadev had to be killed. He was unqualified. He lost his qualification. So did Dronacharya. Dronacharya, Bhishma, they all lost their qualification because basically they became contaminated, Prabhupada said, eating food cooked in the kitchen, Duryodhana's kitchen. So they lost their qualification. What can you say? So anyway, he wasn't a Kshatriya. And he got what he deserved. He really got what he deserved. I mean, a real Kshatriya is not going to take the wrong side. That's demon. In spite of being, let's say if a Kshatriya is offended, let's just take his attitude and be a little compassionate towards him. If he was offended because, you know, he wasn't allowed to compete against Arjuna, let's say he was offended, but that's not a cause for Kshatriya to take the wrong side in a battle. That's Shudra, lamenting. Because what is the quality of a Shudra? Huh? Lamentation. Prabhupada said that. Like in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is acting like a Shudra. And actually Krishna directly says that to him, that you are lamenting for that which is not worthy of lamentation. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. So Karna's whole life was like lamenting. It's a Shudra quality. You know, one could say he's a Kshatriya. Yes, he had many of the arts. He was actually as good an archer as Arjuna. Some say better. But in any case, that doesn't make him a Kshatriya. Like Ekalavya. Ekalavya was practically speaking as good an archer as Arjuna, right? Everybody knows who Ekalavya is, I think so.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so Ekalavya, but that doesn't make him a Kshatriya. And actually, what happened? Because he offended Dronacharya by being a Ritvik Acharya, a Ritvik disciple, sorry, of Dronacharya. And they had to offer a very nice Guru Dakshin. Actually, we should do that during our next initiation, have the same disciples offer their thumb or their nose. You know, they're not that surrendered. They won't even offer their money, what to speak of their thumb. Anyways. Anyway, just a joke. So he showed himself to be a Shudra. That's the point. I mean, if he actually approached the Pandavas humbly and say, I really know how to shoot arrows, I mean, there might have been a chance that they would have accepted him. Even though it was a very stratified society at that particular time, but there might have been a chance if he showed himself. But still, you know, anyway, there was stratified society. But in any case, Karna was not a Kshatriya. I don't accept the point that Karna was a Kshatriya. Even if society had some fault in it for discriminating against him, I still don't accept the point that Karna was a Kshatriya because of his qualities. Like that. I mean, what kind of Kshatriya is he? Everybody understands that logic? Thank you. Okay, thank you, Rishikesh. Better drive safely. You know, it's actually funny. Sometimes people are out, like Sumuka's driving sometimes, and I'm seeing people driving the car, seeing their faces as they're driving, you know. I don't know how safe that is. All right, so anyway, who else has a question? Nobody has a question.
Can I ask a follow-up question about Karna and his qualifications?
Yes.
So Karna made many decisions that were obviously adharmic and of lower quality. But you've mentioned in previous classes about PTSD and how, you know, former traumas and other things that have happened to us affect us in negative ways. So to what extent is Karna's responsibility mitigated by the things that were beyond his control, like being put in a river at birth and
we learned how to swim
being at birth?
I'm joking. So anyway, but Karna actually had a very happy childhood. Wait a second. It's not that Karna was remembering being put in a river at birth. Karna was brought up by his mother and father, and they loved him. They loved him very much. They may have been a chariot driver and his wife, but his mother loved him very much. He had a very happy childhood. You know, I was in my mother's womb before I was born, and I was traumatized in that way. That doesn't excuse me from to kill all ladies or something like that. You know, I don't accept that. He had a happy childhood, and yes, he had the skills of a kshatriya, but he took the wrong opportunity to try to express those skills in a competition that was meant for the royal family. He wanted to prove himself better than Arjuna. I mean, that's not kshatriya. You know, you should respect, you know, you respect ordinary etiquette. It wasn't the etiquette for him to come to there. I mean, sure, he was traumatized. Another point is the kshatriya is twice born. A Brahmin is twice born. A Vaishya is twice born. So they're controlled by their intelligence, which is the guru. You know, so I may have undergone so many traumatic experiences before I joined the Krishna conscious movement, like being bar mitzvahed. So anyway, I may have... you don't know what that is. Anyway, I may have undergone so many traumatic experiences before I joined the Krishna conscious movement, but I'm able to, in my mind, separate that, you know, from... And I don't find that Karna had to undergo so much PTSD. I mean, there's not... The movie describes it, yes, but in the Mahabharata, it doesn't describe so much PTSD that Karna had to undergo or trauma that Karna had to undergo. The main thing is he just wasn't accepted as a kshatriya. That's all. It's not that he was abused or anything like that. So, and in fact... You know, Arjuna had to go through so much PTSD, didn't he? What happened to Gopal? He disappeared. I don't see him anymore.
I'm here. I just put myself on mute.
Okay.
So that I could hear.
So Arjuna had to undergo so much PTSD. I mean, imagine. I don't think you can compare the amount of PTSD or the stress that Arjuna had to go with Karna's had to go. I mean, there were attempts on Arjuna and the other Pandavas' lives at every turn. I'm sure there's attempts that we haven't even read about in the Mahabharata. I mean, practically every day was like danger for the Pandavas. You know, so that's pretty traumatic. You know, you'd say, well, they escaped from a burning house. Well, that's traumatic, isn't it? I mean, I would say that having to dig a tunnel underground and escape from a house where my cousins were trying to kill me would be pretty traumatic. Not traumatic. All right, maybe not for you, but for me it would be pretty traumatic.
No, sorry, I meant it is traumatic. I'm shaking my head at the insanity of it all.
You know, I've had people threaten my life, and I even find the threat to be traumatic. You know, it's just like, ooh. You know, bad dreams at night. I get traumatized when I read the news about a particular political leader wanting to take the ability to vote away from the people in the United States. I'm not mentioning names. I find it traumatic.
Of course not.
I find it extremely traumatic, but, you know, I go on with life. So, anyway, I mean, I'm not going to really pile on Karna that much. You know, I feel bad for the poor guy. But at the same time, you know, he got what he deserved. He got what he deserved, you know. Everybody gets what they deserve. You know, that's life. You know, it's not that, oh, poor Karna, he just had to take that position just because Krishna wanted to use him. And he had the poor guy. And, you know, he's also an incarnation of Kali. That's another point. You know, it's not exactly like who? Mr. P. Kali. Kali Yuga. Karna. I'm not Karna, I'm sorry. Duryodhana. I got it wrong, sorry. Duryodhana was an incarnation of Kali. And Shukuni was an incarnation of Dwarpa. Yeah, I got it wrong, sorry. But Karna was actually just like one of their associates. Anyway, there's some information about his past life, how he got cursed, and he had to take that particular position. And I forget the exact description. But everybody gets what they deserve. I mean, it's not that Krishna's just putting on some play to entertain us. And poor Karna has to be the fall guy in the play. He got what he deserved. Just like Jayadrath got what he deserved. Everybody got what they deserved. Sounds pretty hellish, doesn't it? But we get what we deserve too. Unless we become Krishna conscious, we have to take repeated birth and death in this material world and get traumatized in another woman's womb in the next life.
So if Karna got what he deserved,
yeah,
then why is it the pure devotee Mother Kunti and the Pandavas lamented for Karna's fate?
Why do they lament for Karna's fate? Because the pure devotee does have some emotions that refer to this world. Like Prabhupada lamented about his children. You know, that there is some, when the pure devotee comes down, he acts in certain aspects like someone who's in this world. That's just part of the pastime. Like Prabhupada did. Prabhupada tried to engage Vrindavan Day in distributing books, and Vrindavan Day simply took money from Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada did show some what we would consider to be sentimentality. It wasn't mundane, but sentimentality towards his family. Prabhupada, even at one time, if he was lamenting, he said, actually, his wife was very good, but, you know, Prabhupada said, I said, I was very bad. You know, Prabhupada was lamenting like that. So when the pure devotee comes down, then, you know, he acts in a certain way, so he's acts like one of us. Like that. And naturally, Kunti would have some affection for her firstborn son. That's a natural mother's affection. It's not the pure devotees are like callous, like stones, and have no feelings. They have feelings even in this world. You understand? So, you know, being a pure devotee doesn't mean you're just so much up there in the stratosphere that you don't have relationships. Okay. So I just pray we can get the Krishnamobile soon by your mercy. Gopal. Anyway, so I think we have to end now. So thank you all. We may have a special program tomorrow night, maybe just Bhagavad Gita or some other thing I was planning on, that possibly having a talk on how to raise Krishna conscious children. I mean, interview. I'm not expert in how to raise Krishna conscious children. Just all I know is what my mother taught me. So anyway, so on that happy note, we'll see everybody tomorrow night, same time, same station. Remember, next week is Radhastami. It's on the 26th for those of you who are in India, New Zealand, Fiji, and it's on the 25th for those of you who are here in America. And on the 26th in the evening, we're going to have an initiation with some people from Australia, some people from New Zealand. That's going to be the 26th in Australia and in New Zealand. At, let's see, Australia is going to be at 7 o'clock. New Zealand is going to be at 9 o'clock. And here it's going to be at 5 o'clock in the morning. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Swami Guru, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.